What if you could learn more about your health in under an hour? The Pronuvo Whole Body Scan gives you a comprehensive look at your health, screening for over 500 conditions, including many solid tumors as early as stage one. High-quality imaging, no radiation, no contrast. Book your scan today at Pronuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com. Gain clarity, confidence, and peace of mind with Pronuvo. Invest in your health today. Visit Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
Weight Watchers now offers access to affordable GLP-1s. It works for members like...
I'm Haley, and I've lost 100 pounds. Weight Watchers has everything I need, from weight loss medications to nutrition support and help with my side effects. It's all in one place.
Weight Watchers handles the insurance for you and offers affordable cash pay options. With our program, our members are losing more weight with expert nutrition and side effect support.
I'm Mike, and I've lost 135 pounds. Weight Watchers prescribing GLP-1 medications, it's been life-changing.
I'm Sharia, and I lost 80 pounds on Weight Watchers. I realized that it would take more than a prescription to lose weight and feel good on a GLP-1.
Better results, expert support, lose more weight, make it last.
I can't imagine doing a GLP-1 without Weight Watchers.
Get started for as low as $25 at weightwatchers.com/GLP-1.
Medications require eligibility and prescription. Patients on 15 milligrams of tirzepatide had an average of 21% weight loss in a 72-week clinical trial when paired with diet and exercise. First month as low as $25 with a 12-month MedPlus plan. Does not include the cost of GLP-1 medications.
This show is brought to you by The Makery, the podcast network for makers.
What's going on, guys? Welcome to Knife Talk. It's a podcast for knife makers, knife enthusiasts, I guess a lot of biscuit lovers too, and among other things. But I'm Jeff Fader from Fader Knives. I'm here with Craig Lockwood. He's back, baby, from Chop Knives and Mareko Momasi Fire Arts. We're here every week, whether you like it or not. And Craig is back, which we love. And Craig, how the hell are you?
I'm okay. I'm still waiting on a surgery, which is now happening in April. I haven't been myself for a while now. Physically. I'm just fed up of not being me and not being able to do what I want to be doing. It's all good. I really can't complain. My little boy has been off school the last 2 days as well, Buddy, and he's only just turned 4. So it's just been the two of us in our pajamas watching kids' TV for days.
That's fine.
My head is mush. So when you're like, on the show tonight, I'm like, yes, I'm coming on. I need to speak to adults. So me and Mareko can have a nice conversation. Then obviously we've got Jeff then, there's another child. But it's fine. It's fine.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I hate to break it to you. Since you've been gone, I've destroyed all the goodwill you've built up. In all the 9 years, I've destroyed all the goodwill in a matter of episodes. Oh, dude, I got people mad about the fucking biscuits. We talked about biscuits last week, Craig. A lot of food talk lately, and we've been getting a lot biscuits. Of feedback.
Are these like southern biscuits or are these like British biscuits?
Well, I got it. The southerners are mad at me because I said the synopsis was, if you raw dog a biscuit without anything on it, you're going to die of dehydration. You want to kill yourself, eat a fucking biscuit, and then they're mad at me. The Canadians are mad at me. I got a guy over in the UK who sent us a scathing message. He mad at me. Not to mention, I got other podcasts shooting their mouths off behind paywalls mad at me from the Baltics or wherever the hell they are. I'm up to my back teeth and people being upset at me, not you. However, Mareko did catch a few strays, so don't worry about that. We'll get to that later.
Yeah.
Fair enough. But you're right, a biscuit, if you're talking British biscuits, there used to be an advert, they used to say a drink is too wet without one.
Funny enough, we basically made the point that like a scone, which I said, Mareko had said that he had a scone and he said it was pretty good. And I said, did it have a blueberry in it? And he said, yeah. And I said, the blueberry probably saved your life because the fucking thing is so dry. And I got scone people are mad at me. So it's like, you can't win.
To be clear, I've only had one blueberry
and a scone. That's wrong anyway.
Yeah, I've only had one good scone in my entire life, and it probably had a blueberry in it.
This whole like of in terms of baking products, this branch of baking was a complete mistake. That whole area of like dry, flaky, fuck them. They already had it at me. They could keep it. I mean, it's just like, I mean, I'm not stopping. We had plenty to talk about. Dude, we're going to do like a quarter of the show is going to be about biscuits and people's opinions on biscuits. So. Well, Mareko, how you been?
Yeah, I was just going to say our friend Dennis actually reached out to me to shame me for my love of ketchup.
Yeah, we had there's you all know sorts what? Of.
Fuck it. I fucking love ketchup. In fact, depending on the type of cheeseburger, if it's a basic ass cheeseburger that's maybe it's mid, I'll fucking hit it with ketchup on every single fucking bite. I love ketchup that much.
Oof. See, I told you, Craig, this is what happens. We start right in, this is turned into condiment talk. Dry out the parents, it's ketchup.
The parents have gone away and said, just look after yourself, kids. I won't be long. Right. Yeah, you're putting ketchup on every bite.
Swimming on ketchup. Yeah, exactly.
People so mad at us. It's hilarious. You know, here's the best part about Knife Talk. We will never get a message about we're full of shit on any advice we give or anything we talk about. Maybe you get a word here or there or wrong or whatever, but no one ever says these guys are full of shit. Don't listen to them. It's like, you don't know what you're talking about when it comes to fucking biscuits. And how dare you catch up on a hot dog? Fine. That's what you're going to be mad about. Fine. As long as we're not full of shit, I don't care. Yeah. I don't care what you say.
Yeah.
I did.
Stay in our lane.
Yeah. I recorded Hustle and Grind podcast a couple of days ago with our guys Ryan and Noah. Had a good chat over there. Otherwise, just been kind of like, I don't know. I've alluded to difficulties in my life, and so I've been kind of very focused on that lately. A lot of like back and forth around lawyers and shit, and it's stressful and frustrating, and it's not my favorite. And also, like, I'm basically the page boy going between people. I'm like, what the fuck has happened here? Because I don't know what the hell I'm doing, or if I'm even saying the right word. So that's been kind of stressful, but I don't know. Just I'm still like had some really great conversations with our friend Gabe Fletcher and our friend Joshua Prince over the last week, just talking about steel and new things that they're doing. And Gabe's doing some really cool stuff with stainless, which is fun. Yeah, I don't know. It's not maybe been the most productive week in the world for me, but it's been all right.
Did you have fun with Hustle and Grind?
I did have fun with Hustle and Grind. We also talked about a lot of food stuff over there, too.
Oh, see? See these motherfuckers? I got another podcast.
I think the problem's me. I'm just like a fat kid rolling around, so. And I want to eat food so. All the time.
I think some of these guys get a little influenced. That's what I think. But other than that, they didn't take any hard shots at me. I
can't remember.
They're probably, that's a yes.
Ryan might have. I really can't remember. I go into these interviews, I talk, and then at the end of it, I'm like, what the fuck did I even say? Yes. I don't remember anything I said.
Listen.
Kind of blackout for a little
bit. I'm sure he did. Saluting the Hustle and Grind podcast and High Carbon and all these guys. Respect the game. I know I got you. Respect I'm you. With you.
I heard that one of our fellow podcasts died. Recently, what was it? Steel, what? Fire, and
oh, but you say, listen, you got to be careful when you say these things. No, nobody died, ladies and gentlemen. Nobody
no, the
died.
Podcast, not podcasters.
Yeah,
okay.
Oh, yeah, podcast. Yeah. Fire okay. and Steel's okay. gone. Fire yeah. and Steel, and then our boy J Mod Knives, who I'm going to have on full blast next week. He said that what's up with cooking in the shop is no moss. So we salute you both.
Oh,
you did whatever it took.
Yeah.
Just wasn't good enough.
Oh, jeez. Oh, my God.
Respect the game, ladies and gentlemen. Respect the game. You did your best. Just wasn't.
I was trying to offer my condolences, and then you shit right on top
of
that.
I took a big dump right on there, didn't I? I apologize. Listen, J-Mod's my guy. Don't worry about that. And Toby tried. Toby did his best. He did his best, but... I'll tell you what, you know, interesting enough that you say that, I was listening to a radio show and they were interviewing another radio guy and they were saying that the biggest problem that they had was their ratings really fell off when they started doing political stuff. And all these like niche, you know, sports shows started, you know, especially during COVID and stuff like that, they started really doing political stuff and it just sent everybody off. And it's like, that was one of the things that I, you know, with knife talk is, you know, we talk about knives and, you know, food is okay. Is knife adjacent and stuff like that. But we don't get political. And I think that, I think it makes
People, politics is everywhere now, isn't it? And I think people want a break from that. That's, you know, they check out when they listen to podcasts. That's what I do anyway. I use them as an escape. And the last thing you want, you know, is more of, let's face it, politics is bad news. Whichever way you listen to it, it's going to be bad news. And nobody needs more bad news in their life. Nobody.
And it's also propaganda. Like, these podcasters with these opinions are not being objective. They're kind of like propaganda. Yeah. You know, they're trying to like figure out which way, they're trying to tell you which way to go. And it's like,
All of them, to be fair.
So salute to all the podcasters out there, especially the ones talking shit behind paywalls.
What have I missed?
No, it's like my guys. I was on the High Carbon Steel, and Keith Colby's my guy. I'm with those guys 100%. And apparently, my man Baltic, who used to be a listener here, he had some things to say about me, but he waited till the fucking Patreon to say it. I ain't paying to get my ass handed to me, that's for sure. I do it for free, you know? So we're good. I'm with you. Respect the game. Respect the game. I got you, my dog.
So what's been going on with you, Jeff? What's happening?
I'm doing a blacksmithing job for a customer of mine, and I have to make these. I got asked, there's this construction project, and they need this hardware, and the hardware is these eye bolts. You know what an eye bolt is? It's basically like, you know, threaded one side and then an eye on the other. Well, the distance between the threading and the eye is like 7 feet long, so they can't really buy them, and there's got to be a break on there. They're just long bars. So I had to go and, you know, put a bid in, and, you know, it was one of those things where I really didn't want to do any heavy lifting, and I had to make jigs to kind of figure out a way to bend the eye hook without having to move the rest of the 8 feet of steel. So it's going to be, that's a kind of a neat project just because it's a good customer of mine. And, you know, it was funny talking to a contractor for the first time in a long time. And I remembered why I got out of the construction business, you know, contractor, the first three letters of the word contractor, CON. So it's like, it's his own, I mean, these motherfuckers are, you know, diabolical. But other than that, we've been working, cutting, getting a lot of knives out the door. My daughter's going to Japan next week, so we're kind of like getting
next week.
For that.
Oh, wow, wow.
Yeah, and then
you're going over to visit, did you say as well? You're going to visit.
We are. We're going to go in June. Nice. We're going to go the first week of June. I think Hillary and I are going to go out there and see how things are. So it's very exciting. So
yeah, that's one place I'd love to go to just because it's just so different, you know. I'd love it.
I mean, it's like
very jealous.
We're excited. I mean, you know what, I'm not that excited. I just don't get excited anymore about anything, you know. It's like I'm like legitimately, once I hit like 50, I don't get excited about anything, you know. So
is there anything in particular over there that you're excited to either see, experience, or eat?
We have friends there. I'm looking forward to seeing. Forward to seeing if my daughter is adjusting well over there. You know, like my fear is like homesickness. You know, she's still young. I mean, she's 21, but still, she's never been across the world from us. So,
will she be there?
3 months.
Oh, so wow. Okay.
I just want to make sure that my only concern is the fact that, and I was like, maybe we shouldn't go. Maybe it's going to make her homesick when we leave, and I don't want that. And so there's like a lot of that going around. But in regards to eating, all I've been getting is inundated with, you know, convenience store food suggestions.
Oh, that's
like
right.
fucking egg salad sandwiches and shit. But, you know, we'll eat some sushi. We'll eat some stuff. We have some friends over there, so I'm sure whatever we do, it'll be fun. But it'll be nice, too. I've never been to Asia before, so I'm really excited about that.
Yeah.
Nice.
Killer.
Nice. Should we do a show then? Shall we do a show? Okay. Before we do, I want to tell everybody all about Even Heat. If you're in the market for a new kiln, new oven, there's only one place to go, evenheat-kiln.com. Go take a look. We all use them. The majority of our listeners are using them, and the majority have multiple units as well because they got a unit for every sort of size. They're cool. Head on over, evenheat-kiln.com. Tell them we sent you. Okay, questions. Questions. If you've got a question, we are Instagram. I can't speak. We are Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram. And if you've got questions, send them through to us. And Speedster Stoves has done exactly that. And he says, I think I'd better send a knife-related DM as the last few have been food-related. I find it weird that in the US, your most common experience of European chef knives is mainly with the Wusthof brand. Here in the UK, in my experience, most people who buy half-decent chef knives buy one of the Sabatier brands. When I started catering college, the list of required equipment included a knife roll of Sabatier knives of various types. Yeah, I've noticed that. When Americans talk about sort of European knives, they generally talk about sort of Wusthofs a lot as opposed to Sabatiers. And Sabatiers are definitely more sort of common, I'd say, here than a Wusthof would be. But yeah, what are your guys' thoughts on that?
I really like a Sabatier. But I think in culinary stores, you actually don't see them a lot unless you're in like a boutique store. Just like a little privately owned store. A lot of the commercial places, I think I wouldn't be surprised to learn that like Shun, Kai, Wusthof, Henkels, a lot of the more widely seen brands, they pay for prominence. I mean, it's in every industry. That's a thing, right? And
yeah.
I rarely see a Sabatier. And if I do, it's either at a store where somebody is selling like refurbished Sabatier knives or the new production stuff. I've only seen it maybe once at a kitchen, like a commercial kitchen store, in the state. And I haven't been to a ton, but I've been to a few different stores around the country, and I think the reality is that they're just not as readily available as the Henkels and Wusthofs. I think part of the issue too. I mean, that comes down to what is it like product placement. And where they exist in a store visibility wise, but I also think like they spend a lot of money on being the sponsors of a lot. Like I think Wusthof, or actually one year at least, Henkels was one of the big sponsors at the the Foon Wine Festival in Aspen, Colorado, which is like the biggest one in the country and one of the biggest ones in the world. And so they're all about the marketing. They're doing a great job with their marketing and with constant visibility just in general. Like you're going to be top, that brand, whatever it is going to be top of mind, and it's going to be first thing you think of, or what people are using or most people are buying. And when everybody else is using it, it must be good, and so you fucking get one yourself. But I don't think they're necessarily the greatest. I think they do have some quality products with that they do make, but not all of the lines are great. There are particular styles from each company. But I really do like the Sabatiers a lot. You just don't see them a lot here in the States. At least I don't.
I'm just looking now at sort of pricing. They're pretty much the same. You know, a standard sort of 15, 16 centimeter forged chef knife. They'll be drop forged, I'm sure. Around about sort of 70, 75 pounds for both Wusthofs and Sabatiers. So pricing's about the same.
Yeah.
Over here, I think, you know, the places that the regular person would go to buy chef knives or chef equipment without going to a specialty store, you're going to see a lot more Henkels and Wusthofs. I think that, and there's even like a Wusthof not too far from me, like a factory not too far from
a factory.
Yeah. Or warehouse, or I don't know what the hell it is, but it's for sure. Okay. It seems as though they might be a little bit cheaper over here. Like Sabatiers are not as, I just took a look and I was seeing that the Sabatiers were a little bit more expensive, but they also, I mean, I was under the impression that they did more carbon steel than they did stainless. I could be totally wrong. I grew up, my dad had a carbon steel Sabatier.
Yeah.
And, but I mean, Henkels, when we went to culinary school and we were given, we had to go to buy all of our stuff. You could go to, our friend JB Prince, and then they would give you a knife roll. And there was a Wusthof or a Henkel, I can't remember which.
Yeah.
But they're much more few and far between. And then you're starting to see more in that cheaper kind of mass produced products that is made in. You're seeing a lot more made in. You used to see a lot more global knives. It's a strange knife, but you see it more. And I think people like it because they think you can put it in the dishwasher.
Oh, God.
but I mean, you're not seeing a lot of Sabatiers at like, your Bed Bath & Beyond or something like that, or a place where you would get little stuff. And I don't
even
Willis
and Sonoma or like Sur La Table.
Well, I mean, those are nicer. Those are kind of higher end places with kind of more stuff. We just don't see them as often. I don't think people see. I don't even see Shuns as that much. But at the same time, I don't really go out and look for it. You know, sure. For it all. We definitely, I think that when we talk about, you know, your standard companies that make that stuff, I mean, I know Mareko and I are probably going to say Wusthof and Henkels, you know, probably before we say Sabatier.
For sure. Well, and to be clear, Sabatier is like a terroir kind of situation, where there are different companies, but to be considered like a true Sabatier, it has to be produced in this particular region in France.
Ugh. And is it really?
These motherfuckers, between them and Loyola, it's just like they have lost all their credibility. They lost all their credibility.
Yeah, so there are several companies making knives, like different under brands. License. Like, I don't know if it's under license, but I think there, I can't remember. Like, there was one that was called Elephant Company. There was a line, like, there's been a lot of them over the years, but the Sabatier is like a terroir kind of thing.
What is going on with France and losing out on all their trademarks? It's crazy.
They're probably because they're ancient. That's probably why the trademarks are worn out.
Yeah. But I didn't know this, that Loyal, there's a zillion of them. There's a gazillion.
Oh, yeah.
And you're over there, crazy. And you were over there in Thiers for a long time. I mean, these French, they're just mugging everybody.
They're everywhere in Thiers. I mean, you can go, you can spend the equivalent of $20 on a knife making workshop, which is basically an hour where you finish off a blade, and you come out with a Laguiole, basically. You know, you're basically putting it together. You know, it's there. You know, anybody can do them. You know, kids do them, that kind of thing. It's more of a tourist thing.
But it's and like Laguiole Junior. It's not even the same. Exactly. It's not even the original guy.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, it is crazy. But, I mean, I'm just looking now. So, in the UK, I mean, a place called Nisbets, which is an online store, which is like where all the, you know, everybody in catering college, they get all their stuff from there. You know, so it's probably like your JB Prince, I assume, you know. And I'm just looking now. I mean, Mac knives are very popular. Victorinox are doing a lot of chef knives.
Yeah, they do a lot too,
now as well. Yeah. But, yeah, then it's Wusthof and Sabatiers, basically, yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. There we go. Okay, yeah, I think it's all down to marketing, I think. It's probably why they're, you know, better in certain countries and, you know, that kind of thing. So, yeah. Okay.
I mean,
yeah. Who wants to take the next?
And then you go to the Zwilling, and, I mean, Bob Kramer kind of gave them some street cred when they started doing those Bob Kramer knives at Zwilling.
Well, but Henkel and Zwilling are the same company.
Is it?
Just like Shun and Kai are the same company.
Jesus Christ.
Kai also earns. So Kai is the overarching. Kai also owns Kershaw. And I believe Leatherman. I can't remember.
Oh my God. Knife makers listening to this podcast. Wow. This is the reason why you guys aren't making any money. I mean, we're all just not good at this.
They're just buying the brand, aren't they, people?
I'm going to start buying some brands. Who am I going to buy?
Yeah.
Oh my God. No, Jeff, I thought that was your out. You were going to. You were going to be bought by a brand.
Oh, yeah. Hey, yo, Henkel.
That's your out.
Hook me up.
Come on. Willie.
Hey, yo, Sabatier, get your fat ass over here. Hey, Sabatier, get your fat ass over here and go buy some knives. Jesus. You're doing it wrong. We're doing it wrong. We're all doing it wrong.
Yeah, there's a lot of Dick knives as well. Which is the brand. Yeah, Dick. I mean, they're expensive.
Yeah,
I mean,
Dick, FK Dick. Right? Okay. Isn't it FK Dick?
Well, it just says Dick. It just says Dick 1778, Dick Dark Nitro, Dick. Yeah, they're all 700-800 pounds. You know, they're pretty expensive. Yeah.
Jesus, that's a big dick.
It's a heavy hitter.
800-pound dick.
Even the power knife's a double-ender. Yeah.
Right, okay. God damn, 800-pound dick. That's a lot of dick right there.
Who's doing the next one?
All right, from Ronald Handmade, he says, one for the podcast while I'm here. Hey, KTP team, I was listening to the podcast the other day and someone asked about how you deal with creative burnout in knife making. This is a topic close to my heart as I burnt out completely a few years ago and didn't make anything at all for pretty close to a whole year. My suggestion is to find a second or third or fourth creative hobby that is at least somewhat unrelated. When you feel yourself hitting the wall in one area, switch it up and do something else. For me, the change of pace helps me fire up the creative juices again, and it keeps things interesting and stops me from stagnating. Working on different things often seems to spark ideas for new ways of doing things too. Keep up the good work, and I hope Craig makes it back to the show soon. Thank you for the well wishing. He's back!
What if you could learn more about your health in under an hour? The Pronuvo Whole Body Scan gives you a comprehensive look at your health, screening for over 500 conditions, including many solid tumors as early as stage one. High-quality imaging, no radiation, no contrast. Book your scan today at Pronuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com. Gain clarity, confidence, and peace of mind with Pronuvo. Invest in your health today. Visit Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
Weight Watchers now offers access to affordable GLP-1s. It works for members like...
I'm Haley, and I've lost 100 pounds. Weight Watchers has everything I need, from weight loss medications to nutrition support and help with my side effects. It's all in one place.
Weight Watchers handles the insurance for you and offers affordable cash pay options. With our program, our members are losing more weight with expert nutrition and side effect support.
I'm Mike, and I've lost 135 pounds. Weight Watchers prescribing GLP-1 medications, it's been life-changing.
I'm Sharia, and I lost 80 pounds on Weight Watchers. I realized that it would take more than a prescription to lose weight and feel good on a GLP-1.
Better results, expert support, lose more weight, make it last.
I can't imagine doing a GLP-1 without Weight Watchers.
Get started for as low as $25 at weightwatchers.com/GLP-1.
Medications require eligibility and prescription. Patients on 15 milligrams of tirzepatide had an average of 21% weight loss in a 72-week clinical trial when paired with diet and exercise. First month as low as $25 with a 12-month MedPlus plan. Does not include the cost of GLP-1 medications.
Craig, do you have any thoughts on
Ronald.
That?
Do you know what? I can put this in a context which has been me for the last few weeks. I haven't had a routine because I haven't been able to do what I normally do. So I haven't had a routine, and it's just been... the worst. It just gets you down, I think, if you're not doing something every day. Certainly for me, if it's not creative, doing something every day really gets me down. And literally today, I picked up guitar and I wrote a few songs, and I'm like,
Shit.
I need to be doing this every day. It makes me feel so much better. So I think you're right. If whether it's knife making or whatever it is, if it's getting you down, just do something creative, and your mind just feels better, you know? You know, if it's related to your job, obviously even better, because you know you're getting back on the horse kind of thing. But just something creative. I mean, particularly today, which is mad why this question has come in. But particularly today, it's lifted me out of a bit of a fog as well. You know,
that's great. Yeah. Is it music and lyrics, or both, or one or the other?
Both. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. When you write songs, I mean, how do you do it?
It's always different. So, I mean, today I did one on piano, one on guitar, actually. But it's generally a case of just sitting with the instrument and just not even thinking. The TV could be on, or even the radio's on, and you're just doing something. Then all of a sudden you go, oh, that works, whether it's a chord sequence or a riff or whatever it is.
I see.
And then you're like, oh, okay, then I'll work that up. And then you've got a melody in your head, and you're like, well, okay, let's try to fit some words to that melody. And... It's always different, but that's generally how I do it. But other people do it, you know. Other people will sit and write lyrics. Then they think, right, how can I put this into a tune? Then, you know, let's come up with a sort of chord sequence, wherever it would be. You know, people do it in completely different ways. Hmm. But it's just, I think the main thing is just, like we always say with everything, you know, just start in something. And before you know it, you're sort of in deep and you're enjoying it. And when you finish, you think, why don't I do this more often? You know, and that could be, you know, whether it's even going to the gym or whatever it is, you know, I mean, that's how my brain works. I try to put things off and off and off and off. What a lot of the time I really enjoy it when I do it, you know?
Sure.
So I think if you're in a funk, try and find something that you do enjoy doing and just start. Even if you say, I'm only going to do 5 minutes, if you're enjoying it, that 5 minutes turns to an hour and whatever, you know, you're doing something, your brain's working.
What do you think, Bracco?
I like that. I think it is good to have a few different things going. If you can afford to do that, let's be fair. First off, that is a bit of a freedom for people who either new to knife making or people who have a higher level of demand, and they can kind of noodle around basically and make kind of what they want. But like, I've done all kinds of stuff from making knives to just making steel and making content around that. And he says in his comment to try to keep them unrelated, unfortunately, knife making is pretty all encompassing in my life. But I have stepped away like for little side projects to like make wooden spoons or like butter spreaders or jewelry even. And it has been really helpful for me to still feel like I'm being productive because these are all things I can sell. While not necessarily just like banging my head against the wall to get one particular project done. And from time to time, I do need a break on something, especially if I seem to be struggling with it. Often it's a knife where, say, I can't get the pattern right, or I'm really struggling with the grind for whatever reason on a particular day. I'm happy to set something down and go work on something else and find something else. But we've kind of, like this guy says, we've been talking about it the last few episodes. And lately for me, just going and doing something without overthinking it has really been honestly a game changer for me. Because like I've said before, if I find myself creating space and giving myself time to kind of vacillate or ruminate over it in my head, I'll usually eventually talk myself out of it. When really there's plenty of shit that I need to do and get done. Around the house, around the shop, around just in life in general. And so, I think it's important to keep yourself active, like Craig's saying, because just sitting stagnant is very easy to start downward spiraling, and that's not going to be helpful either. So, yeah, keeping busy is important, I think, for sure. Or I've found for myself, at least, you know.
Having like, office hours has been huge for me. Like I get to the shop at a certain time and then I leave at a certain time. And even though and then when I leave, I try to, you know, maybe paperwork or something like that I'll do or emails or stuff. But when I'm in the shop, I have a very specific amount of time I'm there. And that unconsciously has made me much more productive because I know what I have to get done in that amount of time. And it's very similar to what Mareko was saying, is just get to work and, you know, don't think too hard about it. But I mean, that has been so huge for me in regards to being as productive as possible. Today was a weird day because we had to get a few knives out the door, and then I went to go draw. I went to go try to find some a tap or a die wrench for putting threads on, and no one could find it, and it totally screwed my day up. And then by the time I got to the shop, it was like almost between recording and everything else. So I thought about what I needed to get done, and I needed to get watercolor cards made. All my Bob knives have watercolor cards, so I just started working on those. And it was like, it was almost like it's kind of saved my mental health, because if I just kind of started fumbling around, I would have been really kind of pissed off at myself. So I think I think I don't like to give myself too long of a leash.
Sure.
Know, because I feel like I have the tendency, if worse comes, you know, the reason why I try to be as disciplined as possible, because I know how bad it can get when I'm not. Mm. So I really give myself a tight leash in regards to what I need to get done every day, and then I try to stick to it. However, today my dog decided, because it was raining, she didn't want to go to the bathroom. So I was having like anxiety over the fact that she wasn't going to the bathroom. So I ran back to the house a couple times because she didn't want to go to the bathroom. She's getting older. But that totally screwed my day up too, because I'm just like, well, maybe she's got to pee now. And I ran back to the house. Nope, she doesn't want to pee. So I did another time, came back for lunch. I'm like, okay, we got her all squared away. But it mentally fucked me up, because I was just like, I was not focused on what I was doing. I was focused on my nervousness that the dog would be uncomfortable. So
that's a really good point. Like, part of the reason I've started just telling myself, just fucking go do it instead of think about it, is because it is very easy for my brain to be incredibly scattered. And to alleviate and kind of cut through kind of that scattered bullshit, I just start doing something.
Right.
I just got to start. Otherwise, like I said, I'll just keep thinking about it, trying to organize things in my head, which never fucking works. And so I just got to start doing something. And once I start doing something, and it only takes like a couple minutes, I can, if I sit about it and think, sit on it and think about it, I can come up with all these reasons not to do it because I'm afraid to make a mistake. And what happens if I destroy this wood or screw up the grind or do all this shit? And it's like, the reality is, like, I can fix that stuff. I don't want to deal with that. But if it does happen, I can handle it. And I think the me talking to myself, I start convincing myself why I shouldn't do stuff. And so I've started to just cut out that conversation completely and just fucking go for it. Because ultimately, if it does get fucked up, which is always my worst concern, then I can fix it. Whatever the fuck happens. Mm. And it's like, there's no way around it. You just got to do it. And so I've just started doing it instead of thinking about it.
Isn't it crazy that our minds are filled with booby traps? Like,
I mean,
it doesn't take a lot. It doesn't take a lot to hit that tripwire. And you think to yourself, all right, I know who I am. I know how to do things. I know. And all of a sudden it's just like the dog has to go to the bathroom. I think ruined ruined. And it'll like all of a sudden it's like the booby traps in your brain completely just like take everything, you know, fuck you up for the day.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wonder how different our brains are to like past generations, you know, where they didn't have the distractions that we have now. Yeah, I know, you know, life is generally easier. We got more comforts, you know, we're not working down mines for 12 hours a day, that kind of thing. So, you know, we do have things easier in that respect. But on the other side of things, our brains are just active all the time, you know. It is mad. But yeah, I think it's... I got this thing. I heard a phrase a long, long time ago called procrastinating, where
Jesus Christ,
procrastinate, but do something that you enjoy that could be linked to work in some way. You know, particularly if you're a creative person. You know, so rather than procrastinate and sit and watch TV, procrastinate by doing something else. But there is a result to
productive
it.
Procrastination,
exactly. Like
knitting while you're watching TV.
Well, maybe. Yeah, maybe. Just getting your mind working, as in being creative. I think for me, that's quite important, I think, yeah.
Funny that you mentioned the past generations. I think the past generations, if they could come back and haunt us right now, they would say, what do you mean be creative? You know, who's got time to be creative?
Yeah, you're right. You know, you're right.
We're fighting the fucking blitz, and we're being drafted, and we have to work jobs that we don't want to do. And there's
the plague creative. Is coming. Yeah,
creative. Yeah, creatives for hippies. Creatives for the drug addicts. So
quite true. Yeah, quite true. Okay. Nick Edwards sent a good question in. I heard you guys talking about bread knives and serrations. Do you have any preference, single bevel or equal bevel? I've been asked to make a few and would love to hear your thoughts. Still loving the show. Thanks, Nick. Do you know what? I was thinking about, I as we were talking, I saw this question. I was thinking like a bread knife, right? How different are the tasks that a bread knife does? You can have like a really like a crusty sort of baguette or something, or you could have like a really soft sort of like a farmhouse loaf kind of thing. How different those things are, to cut with a knife. And we say, you know, that one knife will do both. It is crazy.
Biscuit,
but
about a biscuit too, you just need your finger. Fucking dissolves. Stick your finger and poof, right on the fucking table.
I mean, when I worked in restaurants, bread knives were the best way to slice tomatoes because the knife edges were always fucked.
I think anything sort of soft, and you think like bread could sort of tear, I suppose, because of the sort of crumbly nature of it, and something soft like, you know, the inner of a fruit or a tomato, whatever it would be. I think that's when serrations sort of, you know, work really well if you don't have a great, great sharp knife. Because let's face it, if you've got a really great sharp knife, they're great on bread anyway. You know, you don't have to have serrations. I'd say, you know, just quickly to get in there, I'd say the teeth don't need to be teeth like you'd imagine when you're designing a bread knife, or you draw a bread knife. You don't really need to have sharp teeth. They need to be more scallops. But I mean, Jeff will talk you through that now.
Oh, I mean, I just think that, you know, I think that, I mean, in terms of single bevel, double bevel, I think that you should be, you know, I don't know about single bevel. I would think you want a straight slice of bread, you know, so if you had a single bevel, you might just all of a sudden, you're cutting wedges, you know, so.
Steerage.
Yeah, you got like big triangle slices. I my suggestion is make a knife the way you'd normally make a knife, and then do it all the way until you would get to sharpen it, and then you knock in the scallops.
Yeah.
The one thing I'll say is there's no magic bullet in regards to the size of the size of the diameter of the radiuses and then the spacing. So what you need to do is you need to practice. I say this is the thing that knife makers drive me crazy, and they don't practice on a. You can practice cutting incisions on a piece of garbage, you know, a piece of steel, like a piece of regular steel. Just you got to get your spacing right, and you got to get your diameter of your contact wheel right, and then try it, because the different, you'd be surprised how different spacing and size and depth of your radius will be. So yeah, the key is just to try it, and don't make them like shark teeth. You're not making a saw.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah. If you make, I've found the hard way, if you make it too deep of a serration, it's going to grab the bread or whatever you're cutting. But especially if it's a crusty bread, it's going to drag it all over the place. And I actually cut myself a couple times because I was pulling the bread around with the blade of the knife, and I ended up catching my hand on one of the teeth when I, instead of it just kind of staying in place. And so I realized that you want to try to keep the serrations kind of as shallow as possible, but still have them in there, because the point of the teeth of the serration is to keep the cutting portion of the serration off of the cutting surface, so that only comes in contact with the material it's cutting. The times that I've only made a couple bread knives, but I just ground them, like Jeff was saying, just the same way that I would grind a normal knife, symmetrical. But when it came to sharpening, normally I would sharpen a knife on both sides. I would sharpen just on from one direction, and then I cut in my serrations after sharpening the knife. And all the while, and like, you got to be careful, but you do want the edge where those teeth are to also come down to kind of like a cutting point too.
We have a lot of listener feedback we have to get to.
Let's do it.
But before go ahead. Sorry.
Before we do, yes. If you're grinding these scallops or these serrations, how are you doing that, Jeff?
Oh, I'm using a Broadbeck Ironworks 2x72 grinder. And you go to broadbeckironworks.com and you look through all the things they have, including their big old 3x79s and all their attachments, all their parts and stuff like that. You can put in the promo code KnifeTalk10 and get 10% off everything. So we're big fans of Broadbeck, and, you know, we're with them 100%. So listener feedback, guys, if you go to Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram, you can send us your listener feedback. Before we get to food talk, there is a lot of talk in regards to what we were talking about last week. And one of the things we got was a message from our man. Oh, we got a last minute from Timing Isn't Everything. We don't know what that is yet, but we're going to play it. Timing is the band. But before we're going to get to Speedster Stoves. He's got something to tell us. And he said it's a voicemail message. So here we go.
Morning, lads. This is my elevator pitch. It's just come to me while I was half asleep in bed. The induction heat treat oven. Induction heating of the metal rather than heating coils. I think it's a brilliant idea. Thanks, bye.
Yeah, we were talking about elevator pitches. We wanted our listeners to do elevator pitches. So that was
like Dragon's Den kind of thing.
What's Dragon's Den?
I think you call it Shark Tank. It's the same thing. Oh. You have these investors, and they take an idea.
Dragon's Den over there?
It's Dragon's Den, yeah. And I think it was Dragon's Den first before you had Shark Tank, I think. We've had it for decades.
I don't watch any of that shit.
Love it.
Dude,
I love it too.
I have been having such a good time. I've been watching the WBC, the World Baseball Classic. It has been amazing. So baseball teams from all over the world. However, they all happen to, you can be on the Great Britain team if you're like, you know, your grandparents were, there. Half of them are all from the Caribbean, British colonies.
Yeah.
But it's been so much fun. We've been watching. I wake up at 6 in the morning on a weekend, watch Japan kick somebody's ass, and it's been unbelievable. So I don't watch any other shows than, you know,
bubble. It's the baseball.
Okay. Yeah.
That's baseball.
That's baseball, Susan. Ronald Handmade has got us another comment. By the way, congratulations to Ronald Handmade. He's now the new CEO of Gamaco. If you're in Australia and you need to get your shit together and you need to buy some stuff, you go to Gamaco. So Ronald Handmade has said, okay, the latest podcast, someone was asking about changing their propane tank. So last week we had a dilemma. A guy had his Apollo Forge, and he got a different sized a propane tank, and everything was crumbling. For anyone who doesn't know, Gamaco has been in the LPG propane industry for 50 years. Without going into details, the size of the tank you use won't affect the pressure the tank can output. That it's only determined by the temperature because of well physics. The bigger tank can, however, produce a higher volume of vapor as the same pressure. In real terms, it means if you have a regulator on 9 kilo.
Wow.
You haven't been here for a month and you can't get through this motherfucker. How dare you?
He's giving him the hook already.
That's crazy. And to think Ronald Handmade wanted Gamaco to sponsor this podcast. Well, I guess that's the offers off the table. This can lead to combustion.
He can come
on
and talk about gas. He can come on and talk about gas vapors. That's absolutely fine.
That was a real gasping vapor right there. So it can lead to combustion issues. The regulator in the air intake will be adjusted to make the forge run properly. Hope that helps. Ronald Handmade, this is why we talk about the fucking Magna Carta. I didn't think you were going to get the yawn, but here we are.
Oh my God. If he was live saying that, Craig would have hung up on
it. Oh my God. We're never going to get that Gamaco money now. Never going to get that Gamaco money. Shout out to Ronald Handmade. We're with you. Okay. Sage Knives, who had asked the question about the propane tank, he says, listening to the episode now, Mareko nailed it. From what him and Brian said, it was too hot. So yeah, so the forge was too hot, and Sage Knives got a hold of Brian, and we got them all squared away.
You say it best, Jeff. Experience is underrated, and I'll tell you how I fucking know that it was overheated. Fucking destroying thousands of dollars of material sucks.
Yeah, well, you know, the good thing is he did the right thing where he noticed it and he was trying to figure out what the problem was.
Yeah.
You know, and then now he, you know, reached out to us and reached out to Brian and everything's all squared away.
I mean, I was going to say that was the right thing. He wrote into the show. That's what we're here for, right?
Look at you. So last week we were also talking about the guillotine tools and 5C Forge. Get ready, Craig. I was listening to Knife Talk for the guillotine tool. They were able to put a plate on the top tool and it would work. But to change it, you have to unbolt the front. Instead of coming in from the front, you come in from the side of the guillotine, maybe one side of the top tool plate. So basically what he was saying, we were talking about a guillotine tool and using a flatter. And then he was trying to figure out a way that you could use a guillotine tool and have a flatter in between. But you just... This isn't really, I mean, guillotine tool needs to be has a higher throat, and then you got to have a bigger throat in order to have something in between the what you're hitting and then the. I'm surprised you didn't give me a yawn there, Craig. I was really
I'm just
this is waiting.
I mean,
for
you
it.
Just mean that now that's your bit, you know? I mean,
I'm just going to cut that bit of audio up where you say you need a bigger throat. And that's all I was going to do.
Oh, God.
He's making notes over there. That's what he was
800-pound dick. 800-pound dick. Okay, now back to the real conversation. Carly Ann is a big fan of McDonald's in Norway. And last week we were talking about Norway. And oh, by the way, Craig, what is your breakfast sandwich of choice if you were to go into fast food or something like that, or do you have like a preference? You're a big Mickey D's fan, right? You love McDonald's.
Not particularly, no.
You love McDonald's.
Occasionally we go, but I mean, McDonald's breakfast, they're terrible. They're the worst. If you go into McDonald's, you don't go for breakfast. No. Saying that, in France, it was very different. Breakfast in McDonald's in France was fairly okay. But here in the UK, yeah, it's not good at all. I mean, if I'm out and about and I'm up early and I got, you know, I'm out and about and I need something, it's got to be just like a good old fashioned bacon roll, you know, just bacon, like a bacon sandwich, if you like, with brown sauce. I mean, that's the breakfast of kings.
Isn't that called a buddy chip or chippy butt or something like that?
A butty, yeah. Some people call it a butty, yeah. A chippy butty is what you'd call a French fry sandwich, I suppose. It doesn't sound the same. A chip butty is basically a bread roll with chips in. Chips being fries. Right.
Double carbs.
Not crisps. Double carbing.
That's fucking
crazy. Double carbing.
That's fucking crazy.
That is such a common thing here.
Can you believe that? They thought, man, these French fries are good, but sure would be good in a fucking roll. I mean, that's wacko.
Chips and French fries are different. So French, we do have fries, and generally they're small matchstick sort of sizes. Chips are like fat chips, like, you know, four times the size, the width, and, you know, of a French fry.
Oh, like a steak wedge,
not quite a wedge, but just bigger. So. Jeez, we're getting into the weeds here. We have chip all over the UK. every village will have one. We have a chip shop, right? Which is a shop, and they basically just sell chips. Oh, you might be able to get sausage or pie or something with it as well. But basically, they sell chips, and these are like big, fat. Think of it as fat fries, but they're not crispy. They're soft. It's just very good. Every village has a chip shop, you know.
You take a potato, you cut it in half, and then you cut it into like centimeter wide sections, and that's your chip.
Yeah, about a centimeter wide. Yeah, and then maybe about 6 or 7 centimeters long. Yeah, yeah. So in a chip shop, that you'd get a bag of them. So they used to use old newspapers. So they'd cook them hot from the oil, stick them in paper, and wrap them in paper. And they steam a bit then whilst they're in the bag till you get them home, or you could eat them immediately if you wanted. And they're just the best. But they're so common. I mean, even where I am now, we're still quite rural here, but there's probably 5 or 6 chip shops within 15 minutes of me here. If you're in a city center, they're everywhere.
So your expectation is when you order chips, you're not expecting them to be crispy. You're looking for mushy.
Looking for mushy, unless I go to an American sort of fast food place, then they'd be fries, which would be, you know, small, matchstick, crispy. Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. How are the teeth in the UK? They like the ones, a little soft. They want everything soft. I hear about mushy peas. I hear about fucking chips are supposed to be mushy. What's going on? Is there like some sort of fluoride problem in the UK? Nothing crisp over there.
I suppose. Well, they batter a lot of things. So these chip shops will batter a lot of things. So they'll take a sausage, which, you know, isn't very healthy anyway. Yeah. But then they'll put it in batter and deep fry it, so you have a battered sausage in a chip shop, which is a very common thing. Wow. In Scotland, they'll even. Do you know what a Mars bar is?
Snickers bar.
Yeah, like a Snickers, they'll batter one of those as well. So imagine. Battered food. I mean, that's crispy. That's, you know.
Yeah. I think there's a place at the Minnesota State Fair that batters and fries just about everything, from catfish to Oreos, to slices of cheesecakes and Twinkies and fucking whatever you can think of. They'll batter it and they'll fry it.
It's just such a sad state of affairs.
I don't think people are making a life out of eating dirty food.
It looks like you. There was a number of years ago they were making bacon, egg, and cheese sandwiches with like a Krispy Kreme donut as the bun, and it's just like, you motherfuckers, why are you doing this to everybody? Why are you getting everybody all horned up for food? It's crazy. So Carly for Damasteel says, there's only one McDonald's and it's got a drive-thru and it's super slow. It takes 10 minutes to get a breakfast sandwich, so it's more like slow than fast food. And then she said, well, which makes me think that they're fresh.
Yeah, they're probably.
Cooking
from scratch.
Craig, didn't you say
when you were in France, you went to McDonald's and it took like 45 minutes to get through the drive-thru?
Oh yeah, ridiculous. Yeah, yeah, like crazy. Everything. McDonald's in France is definitely better than the UK, where it is proper fast food here in the UK. In France, it's different. And, you know, they give you a knife and fork and you can have a beer. It's a very different thing.
Yeah. I think that's positive thinking. I think it's positive thinking from Carly, thinking that it's just because it's fresher. Like, what they're going out to, you know, get to the garden to get the fucking...
They're going out to their Carly's, still the same McDonald's.
Still the same shit. It's just cooked. Yeah.
These motherfuckers are taking a cigarette break. Let's face it. So our man J Mod Knives has something to say. J Mod Knives, our guy, and sending peace and love. Okay. Here we go. This is from J Mod Knives.
Whoa, guys. This last episode's starting to sound a lot like What's Cooking in the Shop podcast. It was a podcast where we talked about what we're making as far as cookware in the shop, and then we would also talk about what we've been eating, what foods are interesting, and we even cooked a couple times on the show. We had that podcast for about a year, and I actually absolutely loved it, but we were down to about friggin' 20 listeners. So having a podcast is no joke. Appreciate what you guys do. If you keep talking about food, though, and people keep chiming in, God damn it, they better go listen to our old podcast, because we're officially out. We're done. We're one of the quitters. God damn it.
I love that.
J-Mod's the man. You know, but however, we've been doing this for 9 years. I mean, we've done food challenges.
We used to do food challenges where one of us would say a food, and we'd have to, the three of us would have to cook it that week.
Yeah,
we did that for a few weeks too.
Come on, J-Mod. We're gonna settle this on. We'll settle this on Knife Talk or a Full Blast next week. But God bless you. We're saluting you. Go look at the old episodes of What's Cooking in the Shop. I give you a salute from my guy.
Craig just sent a picture of some great examples of chips. I could see that in a roll, but I would want to put like
chip shop chips.
Cheese curds and gravy over the top of it.
Cheese curds?
Like a poutine.
God, no.
What?
God, no.
You don't put cheese on your fries?
That is such an American. Put cheese on your fries. First of all, they're chips.
You know, you know, you said you were talking about fucking deep frying sausages and fucking Mars bars, and you now all of a sudden a little cheese, and now you're offended. Get the fuck out of here. That's outrageous.
Right. Before we move on, I want to tell everybody about TexasFarrierSupply.com. Everything you could possibly need. They've been with us for years. Yeah, go take a look, whether you're a farrier, a bladesmith, a knife maker, whatever you want to call yourself. They've got everything you need. And they also do sell RhinoWet. If you're doing any sort of hand sanding, RhinoWet is the only thing you want to be using, really is. I promise you that. So if you head to TexasFarrierSupply.com and you can use Knife Talk 10 at checkout and get 10% off your entire order, which would include the RhinoWet. Go take a look, TexasFarrierSupply.com.
All right, now we have to head into the depths of biscuit talk, because we could almost do like the all beef review of Jess Biscuits, the all biscuit review. This one comes from Florida Man Forge. There's nothing worse than a shitty biscuit. However, there's nothing better than a good biscuit. Biscuits and sausage gravy are sit-down breakfast kings. The best at-home biscuit is a frozen Pillsbury biscuit. Add a tiny bit of sugar cane syrup and a piece of salty breakfast sausage, and you have an unbeatable breakfast. And the quickest way to die is a dry biscuit. That shit is dangerous. So you understand what a biscuit is.
No, can you explain what a biscuit is? Because I don't really know what you'd call a biscuit.
Marekko. Take it away.
When you said with gravy, and I'm like, not our biscuits.
Okay,
our like biscuits fucking, that we're talking about are, they're savory thing. They are like scones, but there's a bit of butter involved with them, and moisture content. So that, and they're baked in a way so they're very ideally flaky, crumbly, moist on the inside. And yeah, biscuits and gravy, like a sausage or meat gravy over the top. Is a fucking great, and a couple poached eggs or over easy eggs. Ooh, that's a great way to eat.
Before he gets all horned up, I'll just say the way they make biscuits is different than regular dough, because you're trying to add cold butter to the flour, and you're not trying to overwork it. So you're not trying to create...
Okay, like suet.
Right, you're not trying to create gluten. You don't want gluten. You don't want...
You're just lightly folding it.
But you're really kind of like mixing in the flour with cold butter, and you want it cold because you don't want it to kind of melt, and then all of a sudden it gets kind of tough and glutinous. So
a bit like we'd call a dumpling then, I suppose. Probably, sounds similar.
I mean, Jesus Christ, we're having some real fucking...
dumpling.
We're having some real international conversations here. But I mean, I found every biscuit I've ever had is like dry as fuck and overrated. But so what's biscuits and sausage gravy is a classic. Actually, they're pretty good, except for you want to just die after you eat them. I mean, that is like, you know, let's pull over to the side of the road and crawl into the gutter. So sausage gravy is basically, they make a roux of flour and fat, you know, some kind of fat. And then they add milk, kind of like a bechamel. And then there's crumbled up sausage bits and lots of pepper. That's like the classic.
Oh, it's just a really dirty gravy.
Yeah. I mean, it's a white gravy. It's a white gravy. It looks, I mean, it looks the way you think it looks. I mean, it looks like it's some fucking pulmonary toileting. You know what I mean?
Oh, God.
You know what pulmonary toileting is?
No, what is that?
That's my favorite. But Hillary, when she was learning about, when she was in nursing school, she would put her hand in the, like, if you were making a cup with your hand, and then she'd beat the back of your back with it, and that's supposed to bring up the phlegm out of your lungs.
Oh my God.
And that's referred to as pulmonary toileting. So that's really what I mean, that's really what it looks like. It looks like some big old loogies. Paul Jansen says, breakfast burritos are the superior breakfast food. Nearly endless options of what can be put in. Eggs, meat, cheese, peppers, mushrooms, veggies, doesn't matter. Every food is welcome in the breakfast burrito. Truly the Swiss Army knife of breakfast world. Also, the best biscuits I've had are called Bo-Nuts. Bo-Nuts?
Go nuts for Bo-Nuts.
Fucking D's nuts. They take biscuit dough and they fry them like donuts. A fried crust on the outside, soft in the center. They're like... they might change Jeff's mind. I'm not doing fucking homework. I've done enough. I don't have to go anywhere. I have to try. Everybody's like, you haven't had my grandma's. Dude, grandma's going to take a beating because I ain't interested. I don't give a fuck.
That's fine.
Roland Shalafu.
Well, Mareko.
You were saying?
Yes. Sorry, Mareko sent me pictures of biscuits with different things in. They look heavy for a breakfast.
Oh, heavy.
It's gonna sit in you. Wow, jeez!
If you're driving a truck and you had a biscuit, you got to undo that belt because your belt's gonna cut off the circulation of your fucking stomach.
Yeah,
you're screwed.
Jeez,
like you're gonna have like that belt buckle. The top of the belt buckle is gonna indent.
Yeah, your stomach's gonna turn into a cement mixer, basically. Yeah,
top of the belt buckle is gonna kind of press into that overhang of your stomach, and all of a sudden that biscuit's going to be sitting on over the other side of the overhang. Roland Shalafood says, biscuit talk nearly killed me. Jeff, you need a fresh Canadian cheddar biscuit. I could raw dog those MRFers all day long.
Cheddar biscuit.
I'm not doing any homework. I'm telling you, I'm not doing homework. I ain't got no Canadian cheddar biscuit. Give me a break. Great episode as always.
So what do you... What's a breakfast for you two then? What's your go-to?
Go ahead, Mareko.
I like a bacon, egg, and cheese on an English muffin with like a ketchup and mayo slurry on both sides. And I do break the yolk while I'm cooking it, but I still cook it soft. I just don't want it fucking exploding in my fucking lap or anything like that.
Yeah, I like a bacon, egg, and cheese on a Kaiser roll or like a hard roll is good to me. But it needs to be steamed to breathe some life into the roll. 66 Mountain Knives. We're still on biscuit talk, dude. I'm telling you, we don't normally get as much like in listener feedback as biscuit talk has been.
Yeah.
66 Mountain Knives says, here's a hot take. Canned biscuits beat any homemade biscuit. They're reliable and ready to deploy at a moment's notice. If you really want to class things up, you break out the crescent rolls, the aristocracy of canned biscuits. Yeah. Hell yeah, it is. The debate we have down biscuits at the firehouse on a regular basis, most guys think that flaky layers are the king of canned biscuits. Most guys would be wrong. You know what a canned biscuit is, Craig?
No.
All right. So there's these companies that figured out how to take like dough and wrap it in basically like it's like a the container is like a cardboard. It's almost like a toilet paper.
Yeah. You split them and then
you know, you can whack get them and then they pop open and stuff like that.
I know the ones. Yeah. Yeah.
When I was a kid, I loved those.
Jeez. Yeah, yeah. The croissant ones I used to have. Yeah. I know what you mean.
I used to eat those a lot, but after a while, there was like this funny little after flavor that I'd always get that kind of got to me, and I stopped eating them. It's been years, but I used to always use those for my biscuits and gravy. It was the only way to go. Yeah.
Apparently, there was a one variation of those canned biscuits, and it was like, I think I remember it was like an orange flavor. It was orange icing or something like that. It was really hard to find.
But, it was probably Pillsbury did like an orange icing on like their canned cinnamon rolls or something like that.
Right. Red Snake Forge says, I have to respectfully disagree on biscuits with Mr. Fader. I'll raw dog the shit out of a good buttermilk biscuit any day. So raw dogging is...
just having it on its own.
Yeah, I said that I thought that's why Michael Hutchinson died from the band NXS. It wasn't autoerotic asphyxiation. He just had his pants down eating a biscuit, and he died of dehydration in his hotel room. I said, you eat a fucking dry biscuit, you're dead. So Red Snake says, I'll raw dog the shit out of a good buttermilk biscuit any day. It's even better if you split it open and put a chicken strip in it. Also, fuck saltines. Unless I'm eating soup. Butter crackers are 100 times better. Then we had this debate about fucking saltine crackers. This fucking show. Everybody's getting all mad. I'll raw dog a biscuit all day long. I'm telling you, this is unbelievable. Third Shift Custom says, breakfast sandwich talk. To spin off of Mareko's scrambled egg sandwich, I like to make an omelet around a sausage patty and cheese and then eat it on an English muffin or a bagel or everything or jalapeno cheddar. The scrambled eggs don't fall off the sandwich that way. Thanks for the show.
Okay.
Hmm. And then last one is... Go ahead.
You know, scrambled eggs, my new thing with scrambled eggs is to get like a soft cookie in a chorizo with lots of paprika in them. Cook them down first in the pan so all that oil and chorizo comes out. Then put your eggs in so you get these like spicy sort of scrambled eggs. It's the best. It's the best. That on a piece of toast is a great breakfast.
I tried frying an egg in chili oil. Like you get that chili crisp.
Yeah.
It's pretty good.
Yeah.
It's fucking great. Yeah. That's a strong move.
All right, so here's where Mareko and I catch some stray. Well, Mareko, I catch some strays. He gave it to me. This is back from Speedster Stoves, our man. This might be the most eloquent roasting we've ever had. Food hot take. Listening to Jeff and Mareko talking about food is like listening to two nuns talking about sex. Not only do you not have the necessary experience, but you don't even have the right vocabulary.
What? Oh, my God.
Love it.
Yeah. Your biscuits are dry because there's too much baking powder in there. Our scones bear no resemblance to your biscuits. Wash your mouth out with soap and water. My wife's cheese scones are so good straight out of the oven, they make a grown man weep.
But I'll leave it. Food, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Wife's cheese stones.
But I'll leave it to someone from Devon or Cornwall to rip you a new one, as scones are more important than life and death to them. See, you try to avoid politics in the interest of maintaining peace, but you lit a fire that will burn hotter than 1,000 oil rig fires by bringing up food. Happy to discuss, but English dictionary says small baked unleavened cake, typically crisp, crumbly, flat, and sweet, and usually made from some mixtures of flour, butter, and flavorings. So,
yes. So Devon and Cornwall, they're both famous for their scones. If you go there, they have scone tea shops everywhere.
God damn.
But they do them slightly different. They argue like intensely over whether you put the cream or the jam on first. So you take a scone, you split it down the middle, put clotted cream and jam. But I'm not sure which way around, either Devon or Cornwall, do the other way, jam, then the cream. And there's this thing that's been on for decades and decades, which is the best. But I'll tell you which one's the best. Neither. It's the Welsh cake.
Oh.
Which is a small version of a scone. So you don't need to split it. It's just like a half of a scone, basically. And it's been, you know, dry sort of... but you do them in a dry pan. You don't bake them. You take the dough, I suppose, and you just cook them in a dry pan so they come out like a cake. So it's basically half the size of a scone. So that's far superior to a scone, a Welsh cake.
Can you imagine how
shots fired?
How sad your life is if that's what you're.
That's where you're hanging your hat.
That's what you're hanging your hat on. The most famous thing is about a fucking scone. Jesus Christ! It's like, I mean, I can't think of anything more sad. It's like world famous scones over here. Jeez, great! what a lame thing to be famous for. What's a Welsh cake? So, what's the difference between a Welsh cake and like a crumpet? Isn't a crumpet basically like a English muffin that you don't flip over?
Yeah, a crumpet's very different. So with a crumpet, you generally use like a sourdough with it, so you get holes in.
Yeah.
So like, think of an English muffin with lots and lots of holes.
So it's like a sunny side up English muffin, because you don't cut the other side.
No, they don't. So it's very, in basic terms, that's what it is. Yeah. But a Welsh cake is more like a scone. It's more of a, you know, like, muffin, basically. It's hard. It's harder and drier.
A scone and a Welsh cake. Can you eat them without a drink?
Yes.
Will you be miserable? Yes,
but they're both better with tea.
Yeah.
With English tea.
You shouldn't have to. Something that you don't need a sidecar situation. You don't. This is really good. things that are really good are good on their own. You know, you don't need to have. But you really need to have some fucking life preserver next to you.
Maybe.
It's like, come on, dude. We don't need a lifeguard here.
Yeah.
And then I think we should hit this emergency timing isn't everything voicemail. He just sent it in just now.
Let's do it.
I don't know what it is. So who knows? Get ready. I might have to bleep it out. We had one that was like wild for a couple of years. I didn't listen to it before and I really regretted it. So you never know. Here we go.
Hey guys, this is Ty here from Washington Heights. And our family has played a variation of the elevator pitch game, where someone gives their pitch, and it's usually like kind of an invention, but then the discussion involves the financial implications and puts a value on the business invention. So basically it might be, get an app, costs $3,000 to develop it, then advertising for $5,000, your time spent is whatever amount, and then net profits, basically how much you lose on your idea. Usually it's more like goggles to cut onions before someone steals your idea and makes it in China. Okay, bye.
My elevator pitch is going to be, I want to do a euthanasia company, and it's going to be called Have As Many Biscuits As You Need. Whatever it takes. Euthanasia.
Oh, you can eat biscuits.
God damn. Yeah. Your final resting place at the biscuit shop. All right, there you go.
Before we come off food, I got to say one thing. It was my buddy, who's my youngest. It was his fourth birthday on the weekend. And my wife invited family and friends around. And she said, I'll do a roast dinner, because it's a Sunday. It's a very traditional thing in the UK to have a roast dinner. I'll do a roast dinner for everybody. And then we had 33 people in the house.
Oh my
and
God.
She'd made a full roast with all everything for 33 people. And it was amazing. So, yeah, big hats off.
Wow.
Unbelievable.
Wow.
Very nice.
33 people in the house all eating a roast. At the same time, there's none of this, you know, heat up in a microwave stuff when it's done. Everything was cooked. Ready. It was perfect.
And
so,
you kind of rolled in like Professor Xavier in your wheelchair, and Get your plate.
I will give this Yorkshire pudding a 3. You have
like the bib on. You have your like a nice tartan cloth over your legs, keeping your legs warm. What are we having here? Fucking give me a plate.
Send it back to the kitchen. Yeah.
I can see you like Professor Xavier just rolling in. I'm ready. Ready to eat. What's for dinner?
It was pretty much that sort of situation. I didn't help in any sort of way. So, yeah.
Oh, unbelievable. It is. Unbelievable. Cool.
What do you guys...
Right, Jeffrey, right?
Oh, what were you saying?
If I'm looking for some special steel to make something very special, but maybe it's, you know, a special client or it's a birthday or, you know, you just want to use something different, what would you use and where would you get it?
I mean, you're crazy. Don't be a fool. Use Damasteel. You go to damasteel.se and you get yourself some of the best stainless pattern welded steels around. Amazing patterns, easy information on heat treatment, etching, and finishing. This is the future of knife making. People want some of these people, they don't like to take care of things. And you don't have to worry about it with the Damasteel. So go to damasteel.se and use the promo code KNIFETALK15. For 15% off your entire order. Just like Josh Prince says, don't be a fool. Use Damasteel. Mareka, you were going to ask something?
Yeah. I was curious if you guys have any traditions for like St. Patrick's Day and food that you eat on that day. If you even do anything.
Oh my God. This is hilarious. Go ahead, Craig. I got in such trouble.
I don't have any food traditions for St. Patrick's Day. Okay. It's generally a shit ton of Guinness, basically, you know. But to be honest, those days are gone. I mean, I'm not out, you know, doing that sort of thing now because, you know, I'm here with the kids. We don't really do much. No.
Okay.
No. I think it's maybe bigger in America than it is certainly in Wales. Yeah. Obviously, it's huge in Ireland. But, you know, Ireland is just across the water from us, you know. You know, on a good day, we can see Ireland. But we don't really do much for St. Patrick's Day.
Gotcha. What about you, Jeff?
Well, corned beef and cabbage is amazing. And it almost, to me, when I was younger, it was like the perfect meal because you don't really have to do anything. You know, like you corned beef in the water with everything else. And I loved it. And that was one of the first things I learned how to cook like a big meal because it's like, just dump everything in the water. You know, and I used to make it in college and it was amazing. It stunk to high heaven. And I remember we had a St. Patrick's Day party in our first apartment that I moved in with my wife. Well, she's my girlfriend at the time. And I had three or four pots of corned beef and cabbage. And we were, everyone was eating it. My farts were so bad that Hillary said, you can never make corned beef and cabbage ever again. And that was that was 30 years ago. Like, I haven't even eaten corned beef and cabbage, but I was like, I'm like hot boxed.
It can't be the corned beef, though. It has to be the cabbage.
Whatever. It was a cacophony of, I mean, everyone who's listening to this who's eating corned beef and cabbage is slowly nodding yes. And then you do the covered, you know, you do the, and I was a young kid. I was stupid. I did the covered wagon. You know the covered wagon is, Craig? No, you don't know what the covered wagon is?
Similar to the Dutch oven?
No. The Dutch oven.
Covered wagon.
Yeah, who the hell? I'm thinking to myself, all of a sudden, I think it's all the same thing.
I thought it was a cooking technique.
I mean, I was like 25. Yeah. I didn't know any better. And I dumped I put the sheet over, laid it this corned beef and cabbage fart. And I'm lucky I'm married. Frankly, I mean, it's like,
yeah.
But it was so memorable. That forget it. There's no.
That she is, can still taste it.
Oh, that she's is just like move. It even comes. The word comes up, and she's saying, "Not in this house." I'm like, "Fine, no problem." But then, if we're gonna really get into it, there's Irish soda bread that you throw that. I mean, that might be one step worse than biscuits.
I've only had it a couple times, and it has not been my favorite.
I'm telling you,
to be nice,
Irish soda bread is up there on the Mount Rushmore of bad breads. It's maybe number one. Pumpernickel too. Throw pumpernickel on there too. Nobody eating pumpernickel anymore.
Did you guys know that the corned beef and cabbage is not a traditional Irish meal?
No surprise. It used to be
pork. But when the Irish immigrants came to the United States, pork was way more expensive. And so they would go and get corned beef from Jewish markets. Ooh. And I fucking love pastrami. And to me, corned beef is very similar. And fucking, I will gobble that up with anything and everything all day fucking long. I love it.
So corned beef is just cured. It's a cured brisket, but pastrami is pastrami goes a lot of steps further. So you make the corned beef first, and then you roll it in you know molasses and all sorts of pickling spices, and then you smoke it, and then you bake it, and then afterwards to serve it, you steam it. So there's like pastrami is a whole nother. I mean, it's it's a bigger, it's a longer process than But it's good. You brought it up. So do you have any?
Just corned beef, cabbage. That's definitely my favorite go-to. It's so straightforward and it's fucking delicious. It's hard to beat.
Farts are just like insidious.
Any sort of cabbage, your farts are going to be terrible.
I bet with all the mushy food in the UK, the farts over there have got to be rancid.
Just eating everything with
I wonder which country. Now, this is the real question. What country has the worst farts? If you're listening to this, you've got to tell me what food gives the worst in your country, wherever you're coming from. And this isn't behind a paywall. Send us food gives the worst farts of other country.
I'm going Irish. All that cabbage and Guinness, it's no good for anyone.
Yeah, but what about
Irish,
the Australians? You know that Irish fart. You don't think the Marmite's giving it to them? All that Australian food?
That's all. That's okay.
Know whose
I think
farts
it's going to be
worst.
Those Irish stews and the cabbage, and the Guinness and the Kilkenny and all that kind of stuff, it's going to be rancid, you're right. It's the Irish.
Oh, the Irish, okay.
Farting champions of the world.
So you guys go to Knife Talk Podcast Instagram and say, what country are you from and what gives you the worst farts? And then we'll do a bracket. We'll do a bracketing system. It'll be the world championship of farting.
Yeah.
What have we done? What have we done?
But I'm going to take a minute to tell everybody about maritimeknifesupply.com. Lawrence is a good dude. He's been with us for a long time, and they do, everything you possibly need. One-stop shop, really, for knife makers with steel, belts, handle materials, tools, even forges, kilns, and more. Always a deal if you buy belts. You get 10% off if you buy 10, that kind of thing. Head on over, maritimeknifesupply.com.
Should we hit a couple of knife questions?
We talked about cutting the
cheese, so that's a nice related.
True, yes.
So
yeah. Okay, where are we then? David Sheridan, is it? Okay. Question for the KTP. I don't think I've really heard of folks doing the following, so I'm assuming there is a good reason why not. Why would the downfall of sandblasting? What would be the downfall of sandblasting through the initial deep scratches prior to hand sanding? I'm picturing belt to blast to 400 grit or higher hand sanding. I've read that blasting alone on high carbon steel makes it more susceptible to corrosion. Would hand sanding have to nullify that? Okay, so you try to cut the corner by blasting before going to hand sanding. I think if you're going for like a satiny approach, that's probably not a bad call. But if you're looking for, you know, a mirror finish, it's gonna be pretty difficult. What do you guys think?
What do you think, Marco?
I think it's not a bad idea. I think I would still try to come off the machine at as high grit as I could within reason, rather than, you know, the higher the grits you go, the more you're kind of chasing things around. But if you're coming off at like a 220 or 400, 320, something like that, you should be in a good place to then do a bead blast or sand blast and then follow that with hand sanding. I've actually contemplated doing this myself. I haven't gotten a hold of a sandblasting setup yet, but I think it's not a bad idea, honestly.
I would think that it also depends on the size of the media you're using. Like if you have a finer media that you're using, you're probably going to have a lot easier time You know, the interesting thing that I learned a long time ago, and I think it was from our man, Jeremy Spake, he said that the ABS guys, when they're hand sanding, when you hand sand with a finer grit, pardon me, you start with a finer grit, you're going to end up getting an easier satin finish than if you start off with what you would think would be a really tough, coarser grit, then you're going to have deeper, you're going to have deeper lines. So I would think that if you were, and I have no experience with sandblaster at all. The only thing I know about sandblasters is if you get like the sand wet, it fucks everything up. So I'm like,
oh yeah,
I'm very like, if clumps it's up. Even if it's if it's moist in your shop or something like that. But I would think that if you used I know guys like guys who do a lot of the brute to forge knives, they use the sandblaster, and a lot of that's to, I would imagine, to get off a lot of the scale. I think that's a pretty slick move. I know a lot of guys use the sandblaster. Mm-hmm. I would think that it would be great. It'd be great to try it out, I would think.
Yeah. My only experience with sandblasting was actually when I was working with Fingal at his shop. And I was surprised at how straightforward it was. I've never used it before, which made me even more interested in trying this sandblasting approach. And I know makers who are getting really great results using sandblasting as part of their blade finishing technique. I think ultimately they are finishing with hand sanding. But I've seen some really good results also without finishing or finishing with sandblasting. It's an experimental thing, but I think, yeah, the medium plays a big part because the finishes I've seen with sandblasting are like 1,000 grit medium or something. It's like super fine. It's fucking crazy fine.
Yeah.
And Fingal's farts have got to be catastrophic.
Oh, he was fine.
He's fine.
Yeah.
Just nibbling bits of cheese all day.
I mean, he's a big guy, right? He's a big guy, so he can pack a wallop.
He's a big guy. I mean, he's got big intestines. And all of a sudden, it's like, you know, that whatever he's eating, you know, that sphincter's working overtime, making sure to keep it all in. And then when he keeps it all in, the next thing you know.
You know, it's a gas is a good sign of a healthy microbiome. So don't be ashamed of your flatulence.
Who's ashamed? I'm just saying that some foods make your farts worse than others.
Oh, and, yeah.
You know, some people's diets probably, you know, are relentless to the people around them. So, you know, God bless you. If you want to fucking drop one, drop one. My daughter had, funny enough, my daughter has friends visiting from school. I always say, I'm not even going to use the bathroom. I'm not going to fart. I'm not going to poop. I'm not going to do anything. I was going to take a leak out in the backyard. And when it comes to farting, I wouldn't.
You're just exposing yourself in the backyard.
I tell you what, I've done that too. I tell you, when I was younger, I remember thinking, you know, you hear that, you know, farting is part of nature, and it's like, it's just like you said, it's a sign of a healthy gut and stuff like that. And I remember farting in front of my grandfather, and it was as if I had like ripped up the Bible. He said to me, Jeffrey William Fader, you must do that in the bathroom. And he lit me up, and I was little too. I did not understand what was happening, and I got shamed. My grandfather shamed me because I let out, and it was must have sounded horrible and must have probably stunk too because I was a stupid little kid. But I was definitely shamed about it.
I saw this post a little while back. It was advocating for farting. One, because farts are funny.
Yeah, they are funny.
And it's much healthier situation than, say, being in an elevator or in a space where somebody's got a cold and sneezing and coughing. We don't have an issue with sneezing and coughing, but suddenly if somebody farts, we
speak
get super
yourself.
Pissed off.
I don't like it when anyone sneezes or coughs in front of me.
Well, I mean, we're very like, oh, God bless you. If they're coughing, if somebody farts, you're like, you son of a bitch.
Yeah, that's true. That's because that's all the air that has to pass by all your feces. You know what I'm saying?
Maybe we need to make that a thing now. If somebody farts, you say bless you.
Yeah, say something like
normalize farting.
Oh, you say, you eat sauerkraut for lunch, something like that. You're horrible. I would be so pissed off. That's like in New York, that would be at least somebody would click their tongue, you know, make a noise like that. You can't be farting next to people. On a subway? Get the fuck out of here.
In your own house, it's fair game, but out and about, it's a different game.
And even in my house, I gotta be careful. You know, warm welcome in your house is only so much. You can only handle so much.
Depends on how much cabbage you've been eating. Not too warm.
Can you imagine? Oh my God, we have no chemistry whatsoever. What are you talking about? Wow, you know, I just started corned beef and cabbage every 5 minutes, and next thing you know, you gotta sleep in the other room.
Then there's the bath fart, you know, and I've got a 4-year-old, so this is a regular occurrence for me. And he thinks it's the funniest thing in the world.
The bubbles
but
come
they
up.
Are the, oh, they're the worst because the molecules just hang in the air and all the steam. It's just like, oh my word, it's the worst. Anyway, Jeff, tell me about Tormek.
I have to tell you another horrible story when I was a kid. But before that, gotta thank our friends at Tormek. Tormek. Get yourself a Tormek and start sharpening right. It has changed the way I make knives. It's repeatable. They have great products. They have really, really great customer service, and these machines are really fantastic. So get yourself a Tormek and stop playing. So my dad was married. When my dad was alive, and he was married to this woman who really didn't like us at all, she just needed any reason to be upset at us. And I was a teenager. I didn't know any better. And I was probably upset too, because it was just like, you know, this person all of a sudden is now like pretending to, you know, acting like my new mother. I hated everything about it.
Yeah.
I remember my dad and I were having a conversation, and then she turns to me and she says, "Jeff, don't fart at the dinner table." And I said, you know, okay, I didn't mean to. And she says, "I know that you did because you lifted a cheek." I lifted on my chair. She got fucking, and that was like, yeah, got me. Can't blame the dog now.
You got to.
Yeah.
You got to. You don't want to be blowing bubbles. You got to lift a cheek.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I was going to say one of my least favorite fart experiences is on airlines.
Oh,
motherfuckers think they're being sneaky when we're all on a goddamn giant tin can recycling fart air, and this motherfucker sitting right next to me just kept cutting ass the whole time. It was the fucking worst. Laugh at a friend's fart, a family member's fart. But if I don't fucking know you, I don't want to be sniffing your asshole.
See, 5 minutes ago, you were trying to tell people how good it is.
I think fart in public, but not when you're like, when you're at a fucking like Costco, they got 30-foot high ceilings, like that fart's going to dissipate. But when you're stuck in
imagine being the, you know, the person that comes in on those steps, and you know, they drive in on the steps and they walk up the steps and they open up the door and there's this big sealed container full of farts. They open the door, all those farts are rushing out of them at the same time.
It's like a brand new
job.
It's like a brand new atmosphere. Yeah. There's the name of the show right there. It's like a brand new atmosphere.
Brand new atmosphere.
I wake up in the morning and I turn my wife's, I usually get my wife's car in the front so she can leave. She leaves very early in the morning, and I turn the car around for her and everything like that. And I definitely accidentally, not thinking, had a bad fart in the car when I turned the car around. She got in the car and she turns to me and she goes, "Did you just fart in the car?" And I said, "I'm so sorry. I wasn't paying attention. It was like
a surprising one."
I thought this has got to be the worst drive ever. Fucking drop a toot in the car. I crop dusted her car, and then fucking just got in. And it was like
a nice day.
It was such a betrayal. She was so betrayed, and I apologized profusely. I sent her a text. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. She goes, "It's fine." Just a terrible way to start the day.
Craig, do you not know what a crop dusting is?
Yes, I know what crop dusting is.
I thought he said that you didn't understand what it was.
My old boss. Kitchen. He was coming through all the different stations. And the first time I ever heard that expression, he just ripped one and walked past us. And someone said, "I think the chef just crop dusted us."
So,
And with that, should we call it a day?
What a fucking return. I mean, what a return.
I mean, it was pretty low today, wasn't it?
Hey.
Yeah. We're starting the bottom and building back up again.
All those other podcasts that gave up, and here's what you could have been. You could have done, you know?
Stick it out.
But, and you with that said, I want to apologize. Everybody I've offended, I apologize and respect the game. I love you.
Yep. Right. Thank you all for listening. We shall speak to you again next week. Bye for now.